Welcome everyone who is listening or watching wherever you are. We appreciate you tuning in. My name is Amy Wright. I'm a managing director here at Zeldis Research Associates. And you are taking part in the inaugural Zeldis Buzz podcast edition. So hopefully this will be the first of many discussions around research practices, industry practices. And that's what we're going to do here today. Joining me, I have two of my friends and colleagues from Zeldis. I've got Christina Witzling, who is our practice lead in our PNC insurance practice, and Catherine Schumacher, who heads up our financial services insurance and investments practice. So welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining. It's good to have you. Just to give a little bit of background on what we're going to talk about today, we all know how to do research. We all know we're all researchers here. We've been doing it for a long time. We know best practices, we know methodologies, we know how to collect data, generate insights. But what we want to talk about today are some ways that we can optimize the research that we do, make it more valuable, really to do two things. The first is sort of the core primary job that we all are trying to do, and that is to help our businesses, the businesses we work with, make good business decisions, informed business decisions, help the bottom line drive the business forward, right? That's the goal that we all are trying to do in market research. The second, maybe a little more selfish, is to really demonstrate the value of the research and insights function, that what we do, you know, has meaning and benefit to the organization, demonstrate our ROI for our clients, for ourselves. And I think the things we're going to talk about today do both of those things. So we're going to talk about two different aspects or approaches to optimizing research. The one is kind of what we call foundational on the front end before we do the research, gathering information and feedback that's going to make that the best research possible. And then the second is on the back end and activating that research. And we're going to talk about a couple approaches we use on either side. The first I want to talk about is on the foundational side. So before we jump into primary research, we sometimes use crowdsourcing to help gather information from stakeholders to really make sure that we're reaching our research objectives, that we know what we need to get, what we know we know and don't know. So Christina, I'm going to ask you to talk to me about an example, a case study where you've used crowdsourcing with a client before research.
Yep, great. And I think crowdsourcing is particularly valuable in a couple different scenarios. One is when you do have a crowd, when there are a lot of stakeholders who might all be in different parts of the organization who might use the research. So if there are a lot of stakeholders, it can be sometimes a challenge for our research partners to manage those folks and make sure that they hear from everyone, that everyone has some buy-in into the research. So crowdsourcing is useful there. It's also useful when the stakeholders aren't research people. Maybe they don't touch research that often. They might not that might not be part of their day-to-day job. So giving them some buy-in, some chance to ask some questions, figure out what will come out of the research, helps them understand what they can expect on the back end. So some things we've done is treating those stakeholders like respondents and having an online bulletin board discussion. Set that up, have some framework, some questions for them to answer that really help them hone what they want to learn from the research. So maybe who they want to speak to, who would be their ideal respondent, and what would be the ideal things they'd like to learn. And that can also help our clients understand some of the must-haves and the nice-to-haves, which is always a challenge when you're trying to manage the needs of multiple stakeholders, especially across different parts of an organization. There may be marketing folks, product folks, engagement, distribution folks who all have their own needs. So that can kind of help everybody give a chance to give some feedback for what they're looking for. So we can do that online bulletin boards, even surveys. We've done some little internal surveys, fill out a quick Google Forms with some of your thoughts, and kind of having that all in one place can also help set some expectations for the stakeholders as well in terms of what they'll receive on the back end.
Great. Great. Yeah, that's terrific. I can see how that can help when you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen, as we often say, right? Yes. So another similar, but a little bit different approach I want to talk about is kind of what we've called an audit. So, when we need to do some work and we we really want to get behind what already exists, what's been done, what people know and don't know. I kind of call it phase zero of the research, kind of before we jump into phase one, doing some kind of research with our clients, really. So Catherine, if you could speak to some examples of where you've used kind of that phase zero approach before you jumped into the primary research.
Sure, I love that, the phase zero. I never thought about it that way, but it is exactly that, where you want to understand what you think you know, right? You want to see what has somebody else done out there, and what do we want to maybe confirm, or maybe see if there's another layer on top of what they're saying that we could learn from. So what this does is it allows you to make sure that you're not just rehashing something that's a pretty, you know, well-researched area. It's allowing the client to say, well, we think we know this, we can confirm it for sure, but let's build on that knowledge instead of just, you know, finding the same thing over and over again, because if they're doing that, then it doesn't really add value, right? So we've done it a number of ways, either prior to a qualitative, you know, phase of the, you know, phase one, the qualitative phase of a project, where we might look out what sort of research is out there. Let's write a literary review, for example, a lit review, just to see, you know, what is out there, what's documented, what's published, what can we learn from. When, you know, writing a discussion guide, like what that could inform the discussion guide, could also be used prior to a quantitative study. If you don't have the qualitative phase, if your phase one is quantitative, the same thing, where you can look to see what have other market researchers, academics, et cetera, done already that we can leverage and then build upon. And also see if it's accurate for our population too. So it is a way of doing that. And it's a way of engaging, not only enhancing the research, but engaging the client and having them sort of think about what, you know, what's out there, what do we want to learn from this research effort. So it does serve a couple of purposes there as well, in terms of engaging the clients, both the research clients as well as the stakeholders at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And just another example that we did, we were brought in, one of our group benefits clients wanted to completely revamp their CSAP program. They were doing, you know, tons of surveys in different departments, different areas, and they wanted to redo it. And we're like, great, but how about first we find out what you're doing? We go in, we talk to all, you know, we talk to the call center, we talk to claims, we talk and find out what surveys they're doing, find out where there's overlap, find out where there's gaps, where nobody's asking the question. Yes. So we did some primary one-on-one interviews with folks throughout the organization, went through all the surveys they had in the organization. We did an audit. And then we basically said, okay, now here's what you're going to do to revamp. So I think it can be really invaluable at making the research much more focused and valuable.
Sorry about that. But you also a great word, the gap. Finding the gap, right? And it is in effect a gap analysis of what's the gap that you want to understand better that perhaps isn't so well researched or isn't so well known as well. So it's really, that's what it is ultimately at the end of the day as well.
Yeah. And you know, you waste time and energy reinventing the wheel, right? You don't want to do the same thing again. Yeah. So that's all great stuff we can do before. There's other stuff too, but I think those are some great examples. I want to kind of turn to what you can do after, right? We've written the report, we've delivered great, actionable, terrific findings and recommendations. But we've all been in the business a long time. And we have all had an experience where you put in all your blood, sweat, and tears, did a great project, and then it gets put on a shelf somewhere and nothing happens, right? Nobody takes any action. And it's just devastating for everybody. So I want to talk about some of the ways that we can prevent that from happening, that we can make sure those dollars are being used to actually move the business forward. So activating the research once it's done. So again, I'm going to turn to you, Christine. I want to talk about one of the ways that we talk about doing that, and that is illumination, right? How do we bring the research to life throughout the organization, disseminate it so people get buy-in and they're ready to go?
Yeah. And we find, you know, a lot of times qualitative helps with that when you're doing the research, because the more clients who can come, and this is really where the activation kind of came out of, right? We hear a lot, our clients go to the research, they attend a focus group, or they sit in on in-depth interviews, and clients who aren't in research go, wow, it really meant so much for me to be able to see and feel and touch that respondent and hear their story, right? That's the kind of thing you remember when you're done with the research. You know, you might remember what you read, but really you remember what you saw and felt yourself. So activation is a way to do that for a broader audience. Maybe not everybody can attend the group. They can't listen to the discussions. So after the research is done, kind of extending that by having maybe a focus group in front of a bunch of clients. We've done panel discussions where we've invited representative respondents for our studies, either actual respondents or additional ones who sort of are archetypes of who we're looking for. And we've hosted, you know, Catherine and I did this. We hosted a moderated discussion. You know, I've joked that I felt like David Letterman, you know, up there on the panel in front of a large audience of stakeholders at a variety of levels, and we'll moderate as a panel and then also give them the opportunity, the stakeholders, the opportunity to ask questions. And again, it's just that bringing to life, and it becomes so memorable for a stakeholder. We've also done cocktail hour. We did a segmentation study. So we were using, you know, segmenting folks into different categories based on their lifestyle and needs. And we invited people who represented each segment to come to a little cocktail hour. We stationed them at cocktail tables, and the stakeholders milled around between the different segments and, you know, talk to segment A, B, C, and ask them a couple questions. And kind of it was a meet the segments day, and very, very informal. So that really, it's very, very tangible. And so the more stakeholders can see and feel those people, the more they start thinking about how they could address that person's needs, you know, how that person's experience impacts the stakeholder and their job. Yeah. So the more they do that, the more they want to use the research and leverage the additional findings. Oh, maybe I want to go read the rest of that report because now I've taken this away and it's become so personal to me.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually had another colleague who, similar to your segmentation, but they actually hired actors to play the segment so they can really be, you know, because any one person is in the segment, but they're not like the prototypical. And so they hired actors to do the same thing, but as the prototypical segment. So it's great. Great example. That's really interesting. Another piece, we do a lot of work to help our clients develop concepts, products, right? How to meet their customers' needs, how to be unique and differentiated in the market, right? So we might do a broad needs assessment, you know, or, you know, look for gaps, white space in the market. What are unsolved problems? You know, what are jobs to be done, right? To use a term that's being used a lot recently. Yeah. And so to do that, you got to ideate, right? You can get all that information. You can get all, what do they need? What are their problems? What are their challenges? But then what do you do with it, right? How do you turn that into something? So Catherine, I'll ask you, I know you've been working on some stuff recently in this activation in an ideation setting. So tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, I'll use two examples because we've done ideation even before the research in a way as well to gain stakeholder buy-in, where we did, it was all, you know, days of COVID. So we were all virtual. So we did this virtually using a tool called Mural, where we had the key stakeholders, very senior folks in the organization, ideate some of their perceptions about a certain, the buyer in this case. So hearing them articulate it, and then we just posted things as if we were in person posting posts as we were doing things on the screen, having them really brainstorm their ideas, which served a couple of purposes. A, it allowed us to see where their minds were, but it also, again, got buy-in. So that buy-in that you talked about is so critical. And I think ideation helps the buy-in, whether it's happening at the beginning or the end of a study. We recently did for a financial services company a brainstorming session post-research. And this is really getting buy-in, getting people to realize what we were developing and thinking about what impact that has on their processes, their operations, their digital approach, their products, et cetera. But to do that, we got sort of leaders of these different groups together in one room, and there were perhaps, you know, 50, 60 people, and did a day of brainstorming where we had them empathize with who the users are, really think about them, build the empathy map, which you can also do in the back room, by the way, like you were saying, Christina, you can do that post group or IDI, have people do an empathy map in the back room to really have them think about who are these people? Because it makes you think about what are they doing? What are they saying? What are they feeling? What are their pain points? It really forces the person doing the empathy map to really put themselves in that person's shoes. And that's such a powerful tool, whether done in the back room or like we did as a group, to really have these stakeholders think about the personas that we were developing. So they really understood who they were. So that is one of the brainstorming exercises we did. Also just taking, you know, we sort of followed the design thinking process of empathizing, of defining the needs, of thinking about how to solve those needs. In fact, I posted something today on LinkedIn, sort of talking about how market research can be used to support the design thinking process. And a lot of that is brainstorming, right? Thinking, like I mentioned, the empathy map, brainstorming on what are the needs. Now that we really understand who these people are, based on our primary research we've done to develop personas or segments or whatever, we now try to define their needs and look at their needs and how can those needs be met. So that's what we did most recently, and really just brainstormed with the key stakeholders across the organization to have them recognize who the personas are and then think about how do we solve their needs? What are their needs? And then how the next step obviously is how do we satisfy those needs, those key needs that these people have. So that, you know, allows them to really understand who the people are, and it brings the research to life versus it, like you said, something that sits on the shelf. No, this is bringing it to life and making them think about it, and think more importantly, what impact will that have on how they move forward with their strategies.
Awesome. That's great. And I know you've been doing great work. I hope people check out your posts on LinkedIn. I think those are all great examples. I think they're things that people should be thinking about when they're doing research, right? Especially when they're investing, you know, a lot of dollars, a big project, you really want to make sure it's going to get used and people are going to have buy-in and want to move it forward. I just will wrap it up by kind of asking each of you to just give me like real quick, kind of what you see as the overall benefit of this. What have you seen as kind of the positive outcomes of these kind of activation or optimization techniques to take the research a little further? Christina?
Yeah. What's really interesting is a lot of this, you know, it all comes back, as we've been saying, to sort of the power of story and the solutions that our clients have been able to come up with when they can see and understand and relate to their users' stories as they get to know these people and think of ways they could change their processes. So we've had clients who have changed, you know, in the insurance space, claims processes, or even in, you know, billing, interaction, customer service. And the other thing we hear a lot is that when we do these kinds of activation activities, ideation activities, our clients and the stakeholders remember them for years. Mm-hmm. And so even one of these, because to your point, Amy, they are an investment. Right. To bring folks in, to have host and, you know, give them all lunch and have folks come in is a big thing. And you don't do that every day. But when you do it, we have heard 3, 5, 7, 10 years later that stakeholders are still saying, remember that time we had that? Wow, that was amazing. You know, and certainly in the post-COVID time, folks are remembering things that happened before COVID and now we're reactivating those things. But the long legacy that can have and the impact it can have on stakeholders' thought process for a really long time to come, I think is really important and a key benefit, just how long-lasting these types of insights can be in the organization.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
and I would just build on that. I think it is the storytelling, right? It's when we report out our findings, we are trying to tell a story as researchers, but it is that much more powerful to your example of the actors, to see it come to life, right? To see it in reality. And it makes it that much more memorable because ultimately our clients want the research to be used, right? And in order to do that, they need to remember what was the outcome, what was the impact, and what should I be doing as I develop, you know, a process, a product, a message, to incorporate some of these learnings so that my product or message is optimal for the audiences that we're trying to reach. So it does, hit the nail on the head, Christina, in terms of what the main benefits really are, bringing the story to life. And by doing so, really making sure that information is memorable. So it does have an impact on the organization across the board.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, ladies. This has been great. This has been very illuminating that we've had this conversation. We've brought it to life, hopefully, for some folks who are watching or listening. So thanks to you that have tuned in. Hope to have you join us for some of these future podcasts. Feel free to reach out to any of us. We're all on LinkedIn. You can find us there. We're a small organization. Our emails are just firstname@zeldisresearch.com. So feel free to reach out. Thank you so much for joining, and take care. Thank you.